like United has had some issues. Can everybody still see my screen? I didn't just, you guys didn't just lose my screen, did you?
We can see it.
Okay, good. Yeah, I got something glitchy on my end that looked like I may have lost my screen share. All right, so very good. So this well is showing a similar sort of pattern. Like I said, we're missing about a year's worth of data during to some a malfunctioning sensor that's in that well, but you can see that there's a similar pattern of drawing down during the drought and then recovering during the wet period. All right, so now we're going to move, this is Fillmore Basin, now we're going to move east to Piru Basin. We're going to look at a couple wells here, looking at the same thing. And we see a similar sort of pattern here. Although this well did not fully recover in 2019 to where it was in 2011, but it came pretty close. And then lastly, another well here, a little further east in the basin, and we see a similar sort of pattern. So, you know, so ultimately what I kind of want us to take away from these hydrographs is that, you know, ultimately the basins, they draw down in droughts, but they recover in wet years. And so the basins were relatively full in 2011 leading into the recent drought, and they have pretty much recovered to their pre-drought levels. All right, so here's my last slide, and this slide needs a little bit of explanation. What I'm showing here, one of the things in this, I'm currently working on a monitoring program and data gaps tech memo that I presented some of the early parts of that report back in, I believe, February. And in this report, one of the things that I looked at as part of the trend analysis is in this recent drought from 2012 to 2016, did we hit historical lows in the wells that extended back to the that captured the 1950s and 1960s droughts? And what I found when I looked at all of the wells that had records that went back that far, is that for the most part, wells in Piru Basin did not reach their historical lows in this recent drought. But the majority of the wells that I looked at in Fillmore Basin actually did exceed the drought levels of the 1950s and 60s. And so I think a likely explanation, although there's many factors, but I think a likely explanation in Piru Basin is that there's the perennial flow from LA County from discharges of effluent from the Valencia wastewater treatment plant that have provided quite a bit of groundwater recharge to the basins over the years. You know, obviously it's a mixed bag. It's also brought with it chlorides that have been detrimental. So I wanted to share this with you. I kind of wanted to, you know, try to bring some of the past into the present and do a little comparison of what we experienced in this recent drought here. All right, so that's the end of my I guess I did add this. So there is one hydrograph. I just wanted to show you my process here. So this is this well in Piru. So I show that at the end of the drought, this recent drought here with the orange circle, that we were higher in this well than we were in this in the 1950s and 60s drought. So, all right, now we're at the end of my presentation, and we'll turn it over to questions that we might have.
Super, thank you so much, Tim. We have another great tip from Stacy Ann. For those of you who are participating on your phone, if you'd like to raise your hand, you can do so by pressing *9. So thanks again, Stacy. All right, so right now I'm not seeing any comments in the chat box, and I'm not seeing any raised hands just yet.
Lisa, I have a comment. We'll give it
Oh, super, thanks, Ed.
One thing I'd like to make sure that all pumpers understand is that everything that Tim showed us on the database that he's that they've assembled is public information. So it's quite an amazing database, but just be aware when we have a chance to get into it, that everything there is public by state law. That's all I wanted to say, Lisa.
Thanks. Okay.
Can I open it up just if there's any board members that have any comments on this? I know that we have all been seeing this in our meetings that we have on a monthly basis, but I just wanted to see if there was any comments from any of our board members as well.
We have a question from David Grant about the chloride levels from LA and how that's going to be addressed.
Yeah, I
think it's a little premature unless Tony Morgan wants to jump in on this to say exactly how that's going to be handled, but certainly that's going to be considered in the GSP preparation. We're just not at that point at this right now.
I can give you a little more context on it. There have been for several years ongoing discussions upriver in the Santa Clarita area, just in general, on how to handle the chlorides there. They've been getting pressure from the state regulatory agencies on dealing with that chloride that's going into the river. And they're working on programs to mitigate that chloride. I'm not completely familiar with where they are today on it, but one of the concepts was that they were going to start recycling a lot of the wastewater and putting it back to use in the city. And so that's one of the things that we're looking at as being a kind of changed condition in the future in the basins, is there's going to be less water coming down the river that could be used for recharge into the Piru and ultimately the Fillmore basins. And so we will be coordinating with those folks and agencies that are preparing the GSP in the upper Santa Clarita Basin area and working on how we can make sure their forward-looking thoughts on how chloride and wastewater discharges into the river will be handled, and that we can then carry that forward into the Piru and Fillmore basins as well. Not an exactly direct answer to your question, but at least gives you a little more context.
Tony, can you also reiterate about the DWR and Sigma about the basins above and below, how they coordinate with our basins?
Yeah, there is a requirement that you do some coordination with your neighbors. And so, interestingly, very recently, a lot of the groundwater basins in the Central Valley, which were critically overdrafted, all turned in their groundwater sustainability plans. And various entities have begun to look through those plans, and they've realized that the plans were not talking to each other. And so when Basin A says, I'm going to take the excess water in River B, and then the next basin down says, no, I'm taking the excess water in the river, and the third one says, oh, I'm taking the excess water. And so they haven't been talking to each other to make sure that their management strategies are clearly reflective of what's going on in their neighboring basins. And so we don't want to fall into that situation. So we want to make sure that we are coordinating with the folks up in the Santa Clarita area and make sure that we come to a meeting of the minds on what those future scenarios should look like.
Thank you. I appreciate that, because people really need to understand that as our stakeholders. So when we're making our six items that we have to look for, that we have to understand above and below our basins. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that. Are there any other further questions? We're good on time, and I would like to, if we're not, let's continue and move on to our groundwater model overview with Dr. Jason Sun.
If I can, while Jason's getting his slides ready, I'd like to jump in here for a moment and say we are really in a great position compared to many of the groundwater basins who are struggling to get their groundwater model developed. And so United has been working on this quite diligently and for quite a long period of time to get a groundwater flow model that will, and surface water model, integrated model together, that will be available for us to use in our GSP development process. This is a major lift as far as workload is concerned. And as you remember, I said groundwater elevations are likely to be a proxy for many of the sustainability criteria. And one of the strengths of a groundwater flow model is its ability to predict groundwater elevation. So we're going to have a very, very useful tool in the toolbox that will help us as we go forward. So that's just a little preamble for Jason.
Ken, I apologize, Tony. And part of that, the reason why we have to do the GSP, if you could reiterate that again, we were put into a medium priority. Why?
You're in a high priority largely because of your dependence on groundwater. Other basins have multiple sources of water supply. Piru and Fillmore basins are largely dependent on groundwater. And so the basin gave you a high priority ranking, meaning that they think you should be managing that because it is your only a significant source of water.
And there was also concern for the years to come, if more housing or more demand on water, what would happen with the basin? Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct.
Thank you, because I know our basin is good. I want to make sure people know that, but that the state also wanted us to make sure that for the years to come, that we're doing the right steps to make sure there's still groundwater for everybody.
Yes.
All right.
Okay, so I assume that's my turn. So Chair, Vice Chair, everybody, good evening. My name is Jason Sun. I'm the groundwater modeler for United Water. And today I would like to present an overview on my work on the groundwater modeling work in this area. I trust everyone can see my slide. If not, let me know. Okay,
so looks good.
Next slide. So we started, United Water started to work, develop a regional groundwater model in 2013. As Tony mentioned earlier, that SIGMA was passed in 2013, and our modeling work was considered an ideal tool to support local GSA. And United Water released a regional model covering Oxnard Plain in 2018, and that was used to support Fast Canyon GMA. And the picture showing here, I hope you can see my mouse, and the picture here show is the 2018 model, and you can see the blue line is the model domain. It covered part of the coastal area offshore, and the Oxnard Plain, Ventura, and Pleasant Valley. And this is the 2018 model. And you can tell that Santa Paula, Fillmore, Piru wasn't in this model. And that's why we are expanding the model up to the valley. And our effort after 2018 to expand the model is to include Santa Paula, Fillmore, and Piru, and also extend the Mau Basin up in more because of the new DWR boundary, so a little bit up. This is 2018 on the left, 2020 on the right, and you kind of show the white area meaning is active model cells, is active model domain, and you can see it's expanding up to the Santa Paula, Fillmore, and Piru. And the red line here, I make a distinction here is because as we expand the model upstream toward Piru, we notice the geology change. And this kind of is the fault line that Country Club and Old Ridge Fault separating, I call the river basins, Santa Paula, Fillmore, Piru, and the coastal plain. And the geology is a bit different. And how do we know that? Our hydrogeologists, we collect well log to understand what's going on underground. And this picture is a sample to show that all these vertical lines are well logged. So there's one here, and there are many. We line them up as a cross section. And we look at the well log to understand are these properties similar, and we can relate to each other and create, we call layers. So you can see this cross section, the same color represents one layer, and there's another one, and it's yellow is another one, and you'll see there are multiple layers, okay? And we didn't just do one cross section, just let you know, because we have a vast area to cover, and this is a picture showing the cross sections we did. And these lines of different colors representing the cross section we did. And basically cover Fillmore and quite extensively cover the whole area. And once we put these cross section, knowing the layering throughout the area, then we could define, okay, what kind of layers we are dealing with. And our hydrogeologists identified 10 hydrogeological units. And for those who are familiar with model, there are 10 layers here for your information. And in terms of when we look at all these 10 layers, we are actually going to treat it as three systems, three aquifer systems, A, B, and C, just for your information, okay? Once we have all these layers, and we will start to build a numerical model. And this, I promise this is the slide with the most words. I promise the rest will be less words. And what this model is what we're trying to do is, what are we trying to do with this model? This model is built based on a public domain software developed by US Geological Survey. And it's not built like in my garage, no one knows. It's well known, well accepted, well reviewed. So it's a good software to use so that people can look at it and have confidence. Second, the grid size. For people who are not familiar with modeling, I'd like to move to the next slide to show. So this is the model domain we're dealing with. And you can look at all these squares. That's called grids, okay? And I start with actually started with 500. And the computation time is just too long. And I gradually increase and I settle with 2000 foot grids. And the computation time is less than 30 minutes. And that's reasonable to do the calibration. And the second thing you want to know is, okay, this model. We need to really know if this model is good. The best way to do it is to look to the past. Is the model, can the model reproduce the historical record, the calibration period? And this calibration period is from 85 to 2015. If we could reproduce the historical record, then we will have confidence to predict the conditions. And this model, when we build, we cover all the major components in this area, including pumping, okay? For Fillmore Pyrite particular streams, major streams and rivers and tributary, we include all those. And also United Water Basin releases, versions along the rivers, and all the surface water is from the sky, it's a rainfall, or it's the irrigation, and is recharged to underground are included in this model. And the last point for people who are familiar with modeling is that we did a calibration period, historical one, from 85 to 2015. And we usually do a validation. And that's what we plan to do in the future is 2016 to 2019. Next one. So come back to this grid. So these are the model grids that you can see on the left, this picture, and those, you know, rectangle squares representing grids. And how, and just in case people are, you know, look, may look different, just like to point out, this model grid is rotated 26 degrees clockwise, and there are over 26,000 grid cells. And it covers area, including part of the ocean, is 380 square miles. And how many wells we are looking at? if you look at all the basin, including coastal plain, we have considered included over 1,600 wells. For Fillmore and Piru, we have 363 pumping wells in Fillmore, 125 wells in Piru, and that's pumping. And there is another important piece of information, water level measurement. Those are from monitoring wells. And within this whole domain, including all basins, we have included close to 900 monitoring wells. For a few more, it's over 100 wells. That's monitoring water level wells. For Piru, 51. So with all these wells, and you can think about all these wells, actually just a point. You know, if you think about it, it could be a point in these grids here, it's a point grids there. And the model could do is connect all these dots, all these wells, different location, and integrate it into a one work. And that's what I call this slide. This groundwater model is able to connect all this stuff, information in different places and integrate it into one model and is able to explain and to duplicate the groundwater movement. Once we can achieve that, then we could use the model to predict the future. We can predict the water level due to some climate changes, or if you want to do some projects, what's the impact? The model could simulate and evaluate the impact. And also, as Tony has mentioned, that you will support the GSP studies and to identify MTMO and other important factors, okay? And this model is able to do. And to achieve that, to gain confidence the model is good, we have a term called model calibration. We want to make sure the model could reproduce the historical record so that we have confidence. And here is the effort we are doing here. I'm using just one well. As I mentioned, we work on hundreds of wells. I'm using this one well to give you a glimpse of our calibration effort. This is one well in Piru Basin. And if you look at this one, we call hydrograph. All these blue dots are water level measurements. The orange line are simulated groundwater level from the model, okay? At the beginning of this year, for this well, you can see there is a big gap between the simulated value and the measurements, okay? And that means it's not well calibrated. So we spend time and invest time to improve the model. And a couple of weeks ago, this is the result. Same well. You can see it's getting a little bit better. We're capturing the fluctuation over time, but here's still a little bit gap. And on the left here, this is the most recent result. We are capturing the low and the peak much better now. And it's much improved result we are had right now, okay? And this is a one well as a sample in Piru. The next one is another sample well in Fillmore. Similarly, at the beginning of this year, the model doesn't really capture the fluctuation, the seasonal annual change over time. As it improved, weeks ago, it's getting better, and right now, we are capturing much better. And in essence, I want to point out, even though I just show you just one well, it's important to emphasize again is we are looking at hundreds of wells. It's not just one well, one basin. It's one well with 100 water levels in Fillmore, more than 50 in Piru. And that's is the, a little bit more challenging test, and that's how we calibrate the model, okay? And once we could mimic, which we I believe we have achieved that we have mimicked most of the water level data, then we have the confidence and we feel we could use to do the GSP to predict, do some predictive simulation, okay? And for a little bit different, for a few more pyro is that for Oxnard Plain, we are only dealing basically groundwater level. There isn't really much surface water interaction. But for Valley Basin here, Fillmore Pyro, we have an important stream, Santa Clara River. And this is a second component that we need to simulate in this model. Even though this model is called groundwater model, it actually has a stream flow component, surface water component. And this model also simulates the stream flow along the surface water along Santa Clara River. And this is one result I want to show to you. A couple of weeks ago, I think this was shown last week by Dan, that this is what we have here is the blue line, the bar is the our observed percolation. As you may know, just back up a little bit, United Water did conservation releases over the years. And we pay attention to these releases and collect information, how much being percolated in Pyro Basin, in Fillmore Basin, St. Paula Basin, and how much water we could get at Freeman Diversion, okay? We pay good attention to that and we collect information. And these data are really good information for us to calibrate the model. So what we see here, all these orange line are the observed percolation during the releases over the years. That we know, okay, like year 2000, we have this much release, close to 14,000 acre feet percolated in Pyro, and so on, okay? And last month, that the model is predicting, you know, it's much higher for year 2000, and for 2003, it's under predicting the percolation. But as we continue to improve the model over the last few weeks, we are able to improve the calibration much better. And you can see 3 is much improved. Overall, the is pretty good. And currently our wastewater hydrologist is reviewing this this final result. And we'll I believe this is pretty good, but you know, still I need to wait for our surface water guy to confirm that this is good enough. And that which I believe so. And this is for Pyro. Another one, this is for the typo, is Fillmore, the double L, and it's that. And this is for Fillmore Basin. Similarly, we look at the percolation from the releases. The top figure here show the result is a couple of weeks ago. And you can see year 2000, we have a little difference. We are over, model is over predicting the percolation. Year 20 is on the percolation. And the most updated result right now is much better. We are getting very close. A lot of them are really close. Okay. Model is much improved. And the model is actually in shape. Okay. We have a review internal, as I mentioned, by our surface water hydrologists and also hydrogeologists. That's one, you know, QA QC on our model. At the same time, we have an external review. We have an expert panel consists of the nationally recognized model expert, Dr. Penday and John Porcello and Jim Rumble. If you are a consultant or if you are involved with the modeling industry, you will know these three are well known, well respected. And we are lucky to have them to review our work. Okay. And actually we have them to review our work since much earlier, like it review our 2080 model. And now with this 2020 model, it continue to support and review our work. And actually they are still reviewing right now. So, and we have received some comments our expert panel as well as internal comments, and I am addressing them now and finalize the model. Okay. And that wrap up my presentation on this overview of the groundwater model. Thank you.
Hi, Lisa, do you want to take over? I don't see any questions, but if you can take over this portion, and then if there are no questions, move over to water budget. I just have to take this call. Thank you.
Do we have anybody out there, Lisa, with questions?
Lisa, I believe you're muted.
Thank you. Sorry. Sorry, I had double muted my phone. we have no questions or comments right now. We can wait a few seconds and see if somebody has any, or we can, if anybody just wants to unmute their phone with a and pose a question or comment, that's fine too. If not, seeing none, let's just move to the next item and we'll have lots of time for questions and comments later. So the next topic is a water budget, and we have Dr. Zachary Hansen to present on that item.
Hello, let me work on getting this up. Share screen. Let's see this one. All right, you guys see that okay? Just the title slide or
I'm not seeing any slides yet.
Not yet.
I see you, Zach, but I don't see any slides.
I'm a Microsoft Teams master, but not Zoom, I guess. So let's see here.
You click the share screen button.
Oh, share screen. There we go. Okay, so you guys see that. All right, you see the title slide only?
Looks yes. Good.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, well, let me see. Okay, I think I'm good to go. I'm Zach Hansen. I'm an assistant hydrogeologist at United Water, and I'm supporting Jason in a lot of this, the groundwater model development and calibration, working with the team at United with the hydrologists and other hydrogeologists. And today for the stakeholder workshop, we'll be discussing some of the water budgets overview and how the groundwater model can help us with the water budgets in the GSP process. So in the context of water budgets with Sustainable Groundwater Management Act or SGMA and Groundwater Sustainable Plan or GSPs, in the California Code of Regulations when SGMA passed, each GSP shall quantify the current historical and projected budget for each basin. So right off the bat, they're very important for SGMA. And then in addition, the Groundwater Department of Water, California Department of Water Resources, or DWR, has really emphasized how we can best implement these into our GSPs. And they've provided a couple documents for stakeholders and technical staff to review, such as the Water Budget Best Management Practice document, or the Water Budget Handout, and handbook. And these both, we have links here, but I know on the Fillmore Piru board, GSA website, stakeholders can also access all that information here, there as well. So all this is because the water budgets are so important for regional water resource analysis and planning. So what is a water budget? A water budget is an accounting of all the ins and outs that flow into the system. And in our case, it's going to be both the Fillmore Basin as well as the Piru groundwater basin. And very simply, this looks like this figure here illustrates kind of the simplicity of a water budget. And it's keeping track of all the inflows, all the outflows into the basin, as well as the change in storage. So you can think if inflows are greater than outflows, your change in storage or your water levels are going up. If your outflows are greater than your inflows, your water levels are going to go down over a certain period of time. So as Jason was talking, we calibrate the model to observations that we have in water water wells. And those water wells can help us understand that change in storage with the water level increase or decrease. But the water budgets can really help us understand why those changes might be occurring, like what dominant processes are occurring that are driving those changes to either increase in storage or decrease. So we can very quickly, once we extend that simple model to a more realistic model, you see the complexity grows pretty quickly. And here we have a system. This is from the DWR Water Budget Handbook that they break up. We can think of this water budget zone as either of the groundwater basins in Piru or Fillmore. And we have a groundwater system. They display a land system here. We have a surface water system. And the blue arrows are showing inputs into the system. The orange arrows are showing outputs. And the green arrows are showing these flows between systems. So for example, we have stream flow into the system, subsurface underflow or groundwater flow into the system. And then we also on the other end have stream flow out and subsurface flow out. And then in between, like for example, the groundwater system and the surface water system here, we have that connection, like percolation, as Jason was describing, when we release, when flood flows come through, when United does releases from Santa Felicia Dam, or when there are releases from upstream in the Santa Clara River from Castaic, there's percolation from the stream into the groundwater system. And likewise, when the system's full and the stream channel intersects, elevation intersects the groundwater table or the water levels in the ground, that water is expressing itself in back into the surface water system, and that's what we call rising groundwater. So the model that Jason just described, that helps us keep track of all of these arrows. Well, there's a lot of post-processing that involves that, but out of the output from the groundwater model, we can keep track of all of these arrows and help account for all these inputs and outputs and changes in storage over different periods of time that we're interested in. So I just briefly want to touch, we don't need to go into all these details, but in the context of the GSP development, we need to provide, once the model results are out and the GSPs are being written, we need to both describe the water budgets, as Tim was mentioning earlier, on water year basis from October 1st to September 30th for inflows and outflows for both the surface water system, the groundwater system, and that can be tabulated in a table such as this. It also needs to be graphically displayed. For example, in bar charts like this, these are both examples from that California DWR best management practice documentation. And so this is just showing where we're ultimately going to be, what you might be seeing in the GSP, something similar to these type of tables and figures for water year, on water year basis. And so with that, these are everything I just presented were kind of general examples. But what do the systems in Fillmore and Piru actually look like? How does this relate to us here? So here we see that we have, you know, the Piru groundwater basin can be illustrated like this with, we have storage of water in there, as well as the Fillmore basin. And then overlying those, we have the Santa Clara River as our surface water system flowing downstream towards the ocean. So from the east, we have inflows, both stream surface water component and a groundwater component as subsurface inflow coming in from Santa Clarita Valley Basin to the east. Large tributaries that contribute to the Piru Basin are Hopper Creek and Piru Creek. That includes our like Santa Felicia Dam releases, all the stream flow that comes down. Within this basin, we have diversions off of various surface water channels. We have that surface water percolation from the surface water system into the groundwater system. And likewise, we have that rising groundwater system for various stream channels. We have groundwater pumping for municipality use and agriculture use, as well as riparian evapotranspiration. And that's near the river channel where the water table comes in contact with the rooting zone of certain species of plants. That's where they also uptake amounts of water. And as the input, we have recharge from all the source types, be precipitation, agricultural return flows, or and other applied water that's applied onto the system. And then finally, moving from Piru Basin into Fillmore Basin, we have that subsurface underflow as well as stream flow that's moving downstream. And then once we move into the Fillmore Basin, we have all those same inputs and outputs that we need to keep track of, such as Sespe Creek, Pole Creek as primary tributaries into Santa Clara River. We have that percolation and rising groundwater again. And then we also have that groundwater and riparian evapotranspiration, taking water out of the groundwater system in Fillmore. And we also, we have recharge of all those source types entering back into the groundwater basin. And lastly, flowing down into Santa Paula Basin, we have stream flow exiting out via the Santa Clara River, as well as subsurface underflow. And so this is where the groundwater model helps us in our particular case as we expand the United's groundwater model up the basins to help us keep account for all of these arrows and more, as well as the changing in storage. And as Jason said, we're doing this right now on a month-to-month basis, the simulations, and we're able to look at that at monthly basis or compile those up into the water years or calendar years. We can look at it any way we really want because the model allows us to have that detail. An important note that I just want to make briefly is that there's large variability in these systems because of the variability that we see from precipitation. This is actually showing a Santa Paula gauge, but it's the longest record we have in the valley from 1850 all the way up to 2019. And the blue bars are showing water year rainfall, so that and the red bar is showing this 5-year running average. So both of these highlight the 5-year running average is showing that kind of longer term period to help show these like wetter and drier periods that the basins are going through. And this highlights that variability. But the main point that we want to make is that that variability that we see in the precipitation falling on the region, that propagates down into all other water budget components that we were just looking at on previous slides. And so because of that, we expect large variability from year to year, depending on rainfall. And if we look back to the past, we know that as true. So this very briefly illustrates, all this is included. I have references at the end of this, and then this is being worked on or included in the GSP development. So all the references will be there as well. But this summary of previous work just shows that there's been a lot of work in the Ventura County area. And then also included within that is Piru and Fillmore basins, often all the way back from the 1930s to more recently. The only problem is a lot of this is kind of a patchwork. As we see here, sometimes Piru and Fillmore were included with all the other basins. Sometimes only one was included, maybe all of the water budget, well, not even all the water budgets components. Often a lot of it's pretty sparse what water budget components were included in previous reports. And so that's where DWR, this whole Sigma and GSP development, they just want to, get clean results for every basin that isn't a mishmash of different years and different components and trying to make sense of it all for planning in the future. The tool that we have with the groundwater model helps us to get that done. And so this lastly kind of just shows that variability again. This is showing inputs and outputs into the system for Piru and Fillmore Basin. Here we list from these previous investigations kind of the range of values that we've seen for inflows and outflows here, but the highlight here is just the variability and the change in storage. So in a given year, you could lose 20,000 acre feet in storage because it's all draining out, and there were more outflows than inflows, be underflow or whatnot. And then equally, you can almost 50,000, it can fill up within a super wet year. And so with that, I guess this presentation hopefully shows how helpful that water budgets can be towards the understanding of all the dynamics and kind of interactions that all these, pieces within of water flowing within the basins are having. More specifically, how does the groundwater model address the needs for the GSP development? Most recently, we've had basin boundary changes. So Fillmore and Piru both extended up the hill slopes to capture that alluvium that that went up those hill slopes, as well as lower Piru Creek, and extended closer into Blue Cut area and towards the county. And so the basin boundaries have changed. Again, those previous estimates didn't include the time period that's relevant, and they don't have the capacity to predict the future under different scenarios that are given. And so that's what the groundwater model is going to be allowing us to do, to do detailed water levels analyses, as well as water budget analyses for historical, current, and future projections. And then while I have people here, we have more to come on this next month. We're planning to talk in more detail about the water budgets at the board of directors meeting in July. And also, I've been talking with various private entities throughout the basins for trying to fill some data gaps. And this is just kind of a call out for if anybody listening that feels that they have any helpful information that might help us with our model development and validation. Please feel free to reach out to us, and we're more than happy to discuss any data. So thank you very much. Here's just the reference list that I have, but that'll be attached to the PDF that we'll send out or attach to the website. And I would like to open this to any questions that the audience might have.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Zach. We've got one comment so far, one question in the chat box. I'll read it to you from Kat Selm. How do you and the model account for those surface diversions that have not been captured in the data, i.e. those that have been pumping without proper reporting?
Well, right now we do not. We capture most of the ones that we have on any records or have an idea of records, but even the ones that we have on records, we have some data gaps that we've either had to fill with best estimates for now, and we've been reaching out to several entities to try and help us fill those data gaps. But I suppose maybe if someone else has if there's more information, then we'd be happy to discuss that. But currently, if we don't know about a pumping or it's not on record, we're not including it. But as far as I know, most all diversions they started reporting, or the state mandated reporting starting in 2009. And often those included packets that included a lot of data. So from our understanding, most of the diversions that are meaningful and of quantities that have an impact, they're included.
And also, this is Kelly Long, and also a question is, do we think that that's a high percentage that weren't captured? My understanding from previous information is that we didn't believe that that was a very high percentage of change when you're looking at data.
I can see it in the chat. Do you have, oh, sorry. What was,
the question that just a confirmation of the fact that when you're talking about flow that's not captured, we've captured the majority. Is that correct? So the percent change of capturing is not going to be high. It's not going to be a 25% more or 25% less.
I think the ones that have reported are the meaningful ones. So okay. I would say yes.
That confirms, because when you're paying for it, you want to make sure that we're capturing everything. So thank you.
Yeah, Kelly, this is Dan. I would just add, there are just a handful of significant diversions, and we're aware of their operations. They may have some data gaps along the way, but we can estimate usage. For the smaller ones that might be a trash pump in the river, that's not gonna be very much water at all. So if those people aren't diverting, or we're not aware of those, they're unlikely to be a significant flow component for the overall basin. So we're trying to get it right, but I think we're capturing the major ones.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Any other questions?
I don't see any in the chat box or raised hands. Anybody wants to unmute and ask a question?
Anyone? All right, well then we'll move on to the next steps. And this is crucial. One, as Sigma requires, stakeholder engagement is extremely important when we're talking about our plans. And we want to make sure that everyone understands, one, what Sigma is. We can't assume that people know what this new regulations are from GWR is. And we also need to understand our hydrogeologic conditions of both Piru and Fillmore basins. We need to talk about the modeling that we're doing. So we have asked people to, to pay into this GSA, and we want to make sure everyone knows what we're doing and what you're getting out of it, which is part of the modeling, the reports, creating the GSP, and so forth. So what we have to do at the next steps is continually do stakeholder engagement, and we have six, what they call six deadly sins, or six markers for sustainability of our GSA. So making sure that we don't run out of water, making sure there isn't subsidence, making sure that we don't have saltwater intrusion. There's a lot of different levels, and they give us requirements as to what markers we need to hit. And so what we're going to be doing is continuing these type of stakeholder engagements to make sure everyone is brought together as we move and write up these plans. And as we figure out what are the markers for each of the six indicators, and what is a minor or major or the average, what are these numbers? And we want to make sure that everyone comes together with us while we do this, so that it's not just decided about by the board, and then all those that use the water have to deal with it. We want to make sure we get engagement with everyone so that we can have a majority that are agreeing and that the implementation is better, because we're doing this for everybody and for the same sustainability of our water and for both Fillmore and Piru. So we're going to be talking now, we're going to get into the technical session. Does anyone need a break for a minute? Lisa, you had mentioned a break earlier and I just wanted to check.
Yeah, well, we are running ahead of schedule, so yes, we can just keep going through. Great. If people want. And if anybody's going to wants to leave at this point, they're not interested in the technical discussion about the model, I'm going to put a link to a survey about this meeting so we can get some of your feedback on this meeting and help plan for future meetings. Let us meet your needs. Thank
well,
you.
Great. And I was just, someone who's on the Zoom was texting me and I said, how great is this that we get 52 stakeholders coming to this meeting and being able to be from your home or whatever to really engage in this has been great. So first of all, thank you very much for all the board members that you're participating today. So with that, I'm going to ask Dan to get us through, not get us through, but to guide us through the technical sessions. But I also want to just reiterate to invite you to any of our board meetings. And then also that you can always see us on Facebook and on our website, or send us emails. So we're very open and listening to all. That's my little sales pitch on our GSP. And so Dan, take it away.
Thank you, Kelly. And I hope I don't disappoint anybody when I tell you I'm going to do a little more than guide this session. And Jason Sun is going to come back and get us through this session. As you probably noticed, he's more technical than I am and more quantitative. And we want to, as we suggested, present some of the more technical aspects, some of the calibration statistics, some of the techniques we're using and approaches. And with that, I will certainly join in the discussions to follow, but Jason has more slides to present here.
Okay, so I hope everyone can hear me. This is the slide for the technical session. So This one, I'm going to go a little bit more detail, and I'm going to talk about more in a more technical term. So just let you know, and if you have any question, don't hesitate to ask, okay? So, as I mentioned earlier, in our expansion of the model into the valleys, Santa Paula, Fillmore, Piru, we are working with a different geology. And here is a good information for you to look at. On the left-hand side are the geology for the coastal plain. On the right-hand side is the geology in the valley. And you can see that we pretty much in the shallower layers, we kind of, even though they are different, we kind of follow the same model layers, but we notice the Wainimi aquifer is a little bit different in the valley, and we split into three layers because there is a little bit of fine grain in the thick Wainimi layers, so we split into three. And there is, we go to the layer 10 and the thing below it, we think there's no wells down there, and we don't think we need to include any more below. So we have 10 layers, that's why. And on the coastal plain, there are 13. In the valley, there are 10. And it's split by Country Club Fault and Oak Ridge Fault. That's kind of almost identical to the basin boundary between Santa Paula and Mau Basin and Forbay, okay? So, and this is the basin we need to work on. So we have, this is a model again, that identify all the basin, the Piru, Fillmore, Santa Paula in red. These are the new expanded basins. The rest, Mau and Forbay is in the model, but because they are next to the new expanded area. So even though we expand, we don't just expand and ignore the rest. We still need to come back and check if the model is good, because this now has become one piece. It's not like we have two pieces. So we are, when we expand, we have to go check all the others basin. The calibration still had to be good. And we know for sure because all the basins further away, they are not really affected. But the neighboring basin, Mau Basin and Forbay, we need to check their quality during the calibration. So we are not just, you know, limited looking at Fillmore Piru or Santa Paula. We also check Mau Basin and Forbay, okay? And the second thing, as I mentioned in my earlier slide is, so for these three basins, Fillmore, Piru, Santa Paula, stream flow interaction is really very important. So it's almost taking up almost half of our calibration effort. And in addition to the groundwater, unlike our 2018 model, we are really mostly working on the groundwater level. It's more with the underground flow dynamic. But with the valley here, we are dealing with two components, surface water interaction and also groundwater. Okay, next slide. So this is just good providing you a little bit more detail of the quality of the calibration. For the Piru, we picked three wells just for you to see the quality of the model. A is here, okay? And this is the other one, key wells that I used earlier. And this is the one that's a little bit further out. Now, if at the first glance, you may think, okay, there's a little bit of difference here. The rest look pretty solid. But I'd like to point it out, as I mentioned, we want to get the calibration as good as possible, but it's not practical to calibrate to every well, every data perfectly, but we want to get the most out of it. For this one, I'm not too worried about the calibration here. The reason is, you know, from 1995 and to 2015, they are pretty good. And we are capturing this drop, even though we missed that one. So among all these wells, if the only one well kind of missed a little bit in the earlier drop, I'm not too worried because we are capturing most of the other, all other wells are capturing all the drop, particularly the most recent one. And I think that's still represent a good calibration, okay? And this is the groundwater calibration. And this is the scatter plot. And for people who know modeling, the scatter plot is basically is put all the water level data together, pair with the simulated value, and to see as one glance how good the calibration. And this is measurement here, is axis, and this is simulated value. When the model is perfect, that means you would duplicate the measurement. And when that happens, say the measurement of this value here will match the values. And when you pair the measurement with the simulated value, then the dot would just fall on this red dashed line when the model is perfect. So the measurement has errors, model has errors, okay? When we have a different errors into the model, there is a discrepancy, there is an error in the model. But we do hope the error is small enough that make the model is calibrated. And when would that happen that the error is small? Error is small. That's when all the dots cluster along this 45 degree line, because the perfect model is all the dots should lie on this 45 degree. But with a little bit residual error, then we're gonna cluster around. That means the model is good. From here, look at it, the model is not too bad. Particularly for the, I apologize, using UAS, this kind of borrowing from the coastal plain. We have a UAS system. UAS for the valley actually represent system A and B together in the shallow layer. And you can see that it's nicely clustered in the 45 degree line. And if you haven't seen groundwater model calibration, you have not done much, modeling work, you may be concerned, hey, there are some outliers sitting out here. To me, I have worked on modeling for so many years. This is not a big problem, because as long as most of the data are good, this may coming from one wells, two wells, that's outlier. As long as most of the wells, the data are good, it is still calibrated. And this one is deep well. Similarly, most of data are really, compactly fall on this 45 degree line. A little bit, a couple of data kind of sitting out, that's okay. And this is both, when it's both, meaning we have water level well screen across upper and multiple aquifer system, and we plotted it. And when you have water level well screen over multiple system, the water level data kind of a little bit funny. And then is you have this interaction between upper and lower. Does it represent upper or it represent lower? So it requires further interpretation. But usually when you see within the system, they are performing well, I would consider it's really good indicator that the model is well calibrated.
Jason, real quick, could you point out on your prior example where that 34K one was underestimating where your on your plot, that example where the simulated value was too low, you can point out where that plots on that LAS plot probably.
That one is actually shallow wells. This one, 34K one, is shallow wells. So
yeah, whatever example you choose, where go from the calibration.
Okay. So for this well is measurement 480, right? Simulated 440. So it's right here.
Yeah.
So that's representing that little bit a little bit difference. But overall the rest are pretty good. Okay. And then let's move to next basin, Fillmore. Similarly, we pick three wells, B, C here, and you look at it, the calibration, in my professional opinion, is pretty good. You capture, this is shallow well, you capture the draw and bounce back, another draw, and you capture the fluctuation, you cannot capture the trend, okay? And then, again, these, you know, we, when we do calibration, we look at each well, look at the hydrology, how the fluctuate, how the water level fluctuate over time. At the same time, we put all the water level data together. This is all of the data. Remember, when you in, I don't know if you have looked at modern report, sometimes people only publish data after taking out some of the outliers. United Water does not take out any outlier. We put everything there. Even though we think that the data is questionable, we still keep it there. And we may make note that we don't think that's correct. For example, these are all kind of outliers, okay? But overall, you look at the quality, all the data fall within this 45 degree line, representing good calibration. And you may notice, okay, this one a little bit funny, and then that may represent one particular well is behaving a bit different. Again, looking at the upper aquifer system, system A and B, they all fall in along this 45 degree line. To me, very good calibration. For the lower aquifer system, a little bit scattered. Remember that I need to point out one thing is in Fillmore, there are only a few lower, as that's called aquifer system C, the deep wells, deep aquifer system. And there are less water level data, okay? And a little bit scattered. And actually performing not too bad, okay? And then, because this is technical session, so I'd like to also touch on the Santa Paula Basin, even though this is not directly related to Fillmore Pyru GSA. And the reason is, you know, basins are all connected, okay? When you develop GSP, you are not gonna just look at your own basin. There is an interbasin flow with Santa Paula. And so, even though, so in other words, you cannot say, okay, Fillmore Basin, Pyru Basin, the calibrations are great. So that's all you need. No, you also make sure other basin calibration are good so that we have a good quality of the model and it's a defensible model. And here is the calibration. I picked two wells here and you look at it, it's reasonably calibrated, okay? And you look at the same thing. I apologize, I typed it wrong. This should be Santa Paula. And you look at it, here it says Santa Paula, so I know for sure. So all these three, I forgot to mention, this plot on the top left, I put all the data into one figures, but distinguished by color with a different system, okay? And overall, this is good, okay? Because we didn't exclude all the outliers. Some consultant or modeler, when they write a report, they think these are shouldn't be included in the statistic, we take it out to make the figure look better. But we don't do that. We like to keep everything there. We recognize there's discrepancy and we'll continue to improve the model. If we see any data gap, we'll gather the data and we try to improve the model and on a continuous basis, okay? And this is system A and B. Again, cluster along is 45 degree line. Lower ecosystem, same, but there are a couple wells, a little bit funny, and we need to revisit those wells. Is it because of the interpretation of the layers is wrong? Sometimes you have seen, you know, groundwater water level is measured, is screened in the deep layer, but the water level measurement just behave like the shallow layers. And it's possible, if you look at there are many deep wells, they behave in one way and just one outlier behave differently. And that's what you may see here is some outliers, okay? And but nevertheless, we put everything out there, we recognize all the data and we'll try to interpret as much as possible and identify any data gap as well, okay? Now this is the part that I thought is very important, the stream flow. You may remember the I call bar graph that show the releases percolation in pyrophilmol. Okay, and this is another way to show it. Okay, similar way as a scatter plot. If the observed percolation equals the model similarity value, it should lie on this solid one-to-one line. Okay, and the modeling result a couple of weeks ago, this is what we have. And, you know, 2005, it'll be high here. That means simulated value is too higher than the observed. 2003 here is underestimating. And then you look at how we improved in the past several weeks. We have a much better improved result. And this is a percolation.
Do I want to interrupt? Oh. Sorry, I was going to interrupt you just because we had a question on that graph, just a clarifying question. That okay. In the Fillmore Basin scatter plot, how many points refer to one well?
Good question. And I don't have answer, but like for this one, this usually probably, this one particularly probably more than 200 data points. Because we are spending over 31 years and United Water, we have collect good data over time, and average, I would say each well would be 100 to 200. Some well may have only less than 100 because newer or just didn't get much data. But each well, the well I track usually has more than 100, and some goes up to 300 because we collect either seasonally, some even we have even monthly. Okay. I hope I answered the question. Okay.
Yes, thanks.
Okay. So look at the improvement that the current model, we are capturing the releases percolation in pyro. Other than the percolation within pyro basin, another observation we want to look at is the discharge stream flow across the basin, and we call it release discharge. And the reason we want this information is, as I mentioned earlier, United Water, you know, been doing conservation releases on a annual or whenever there's water, we do that. And our mission is recharge the basin along the valley as well as the coastal point. So we want to know that how this releases, all this water go. And that's why our staff, our surface water hydrologists, our staff diligently collect all this information. And this information really become, to me, it's like a treasure trove that's really good for our calibration. And this is another information we use to calibrate. And similarly, this is what we call scatter plot. When the model is perfect, all the dots should fall on this solid black line. But in reality, it doesn't happen that way. It just scatter around. But we hope that it's scatter closely to this line. The earlier model results show some, you know, value that's overestimate, kind of scatter a bit wider. But the current model is showing some improvement. It's much better. Like this one is move closer now, okay? And this shows that our model calibration has improved. And in my opinion, again, I thought it's in really good shape, but I'm not the one gonna, just one person, I'm gonna make the call, say this is done. We have to go through external review, internal review, and get the consensus. But personally, I feel this model is in good shape. And this is another one, is a few more basin. Okay, similarly, this is the percolation. This is the bar graph I showed earlier. Now put on the scatter plot. And you can see 2012, the percolation releases percolation in Fillmore, the model underestimate quite a bit. The data suggests is 8,500, but the model is only less than 6,000. After improvement, it's much improved for Fillmore Basin. Okay? And then you look at the stream flow release discharge at the basin boundary. We call it, there's a row called Wheeler Row. And if you look at it, earlier result show a little bit wider, the data is not scattered wider, and it's much improved. These two data kind of move closer. And the second thing you want to really be careful is, it's important to recognize stream flow data is a bit different from groundwater level data. Groundwater level data tend to fluctuate slower, okay? But stream flow data varies daily, even hourly. So it's important to recognize that and set the expectation that, you know, when you calibrate to water level data, the water level data, if you have a long history, the trend probably is robust, and especially you have many wells to support. But stream flow record tend to fluctuate because it's a measurement, not really a particular hour. This measurement for releases is an observation by staff. You know, at that hour of that, you know, if we release for 2 months, right? We took measurement. We are not going to have a staff sitting there 24 hours a day for 2 months. We make our effort, try to collect as much as possible and get those data. And those data will have some variability to it. So by the model, calculate is really monthly and look at each month and the number. So when we compare, you have to understand it's not exactly a perfect match. There's a little bit discrepancy between the source of the observation and the simulated value. Okay, that's my observation.
Thank you, Jason. That's a good point. These are monthly average stream flows that are being represented because that's our stress period. And some of the peaks, as Jason was saying, are very short lived. And that's one of our struggles. Is how we represent those, that flashy flow into a appropriate monthly average.
Yeah, so that's why we internally really look at not only just when we compare data with the modeling value, it's not just simple number to number. It's about the source of the data, what it represents, and what the model represents. And you need to have that knowledge and understanding to make the call. Okay, it's not just simple, okay, if you observe 10, then the simulated value has to be 10 plus minus 2. No, that's not how it works. You have to understand the quality and what the data mean, okay? And that then this wrap up the technical session that I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions or comments on the technical session about the groundwater model or anything else that we discussed tonight?
So Dan, I had a question with regards to the monthly number for stream flow. Is that informed by several observations? And then from your presentation at our last monthly meeting, my understanding was that those observations are still done with a handheld in-stream flow device.
We have a couple of sources of information. We have much of our release monitoring is done with the handheld instantaneous measurements by our hydrologists. Okay. For the larger flows in the model, we're using the automated stream gauges on many of those tributaries and then the main stem at Blue Point. And those are, I believe we're taking the daily average flows, Jason, and then converting that into a monthly volume. Is that what we're doing?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, so some of those comparisons, as Jason was detailing, are tricky, but this is, you know, a model is very much a representation of a very complex real system, and it's definitely a model and an approximation in a number of ways. So I think we had a good discussion on that, but with the monthly stress period, we don't anticipate being able to simulate those, the flashiness of the real systems. And that was like I was detailing last week, one of our struggles where we have very constant flows with those releases. We have continuous flows or nearly continuous flows for 8 or 10 or 12 weeks. And the percolation associated with that is very different from the flashy flows in the winter storms. And that's been one of our big challenges here.
Dan, can you describe for our stakeholders how these models will be used? What would they expect the next meeting? What would we be using these to do? Or what were the next steps with this information?
Okay. And Tony Morgan can join in as well. But what we do, and I touched on this a little bit last week, so this has been our calibration effort is over a historical period. And this period we've been using is 1985 through 2015. So that's our calibration period. Our next steps, once we get concurrence between the agencies we're working with and our internal and external experts that we're well calibrated and it's time to move forward, we intend to update that model for the next 4 years of data. So we'll bring, we'll assemble the record sets for the 2016 through 2019 periods. And that'll do two things. That'll allow us to have an independent validation period where we went into the drought and out of the drought and deeper into the drought and then back out. And that will that'll prompt us to see if we need to do any adjustments to our calibrations. And it'll also bring us more up to current. So the water budgets we can represent to DWR will be through, we expect, 2019 instead of the current 2015 for our historical water budgets. But beyond that, we have to assemble our assumptions for the future, what the future looks like, right? So we have a climate period that we have to pick, and then we have to apply certain climate change factors to that. And we have to imagine what the land use changes and water use changes and pumping and releases and water purchases and projects might be, and we can run any number of forward scenarios where we change those variables. And what we'll be doing is comparing those simulated water levels from the various simulations to our management objectives that will be determined before we do that those simulations. So it'll really be a exercise of comparing our objective water levels, our MOs and MTs, to our future simulations and say, either did we set that standard too rigorously or too leniently, or do we need more projects to meet our standard if we feel good about our objective water levels?
Okay, thank you. And Tony, could you add into that? So for the GSP, we have to submit to DWR. So we're gonna be using the modeling that Dan and Dr. Sun are talking about, and how will we be putting that into the GS, the plan?
We'll certainly be using the model as a tool to extract information out of it, you know, water balance, information on the responses we expect to see in the system due to future climate changes and that kind of thing. So we'll have that kind of information that will be a part of the GSP. And the documentation and that kind of information from the groundwater model will be a technical appendix that will be in the GSP. So if anyone cares to look at that, or DWR wishes to look at that, that kind of documentation will be available for them to use. So there's a lot of information that we're going to try to extract out of the groundwater flow model. And again, it's very fortunate that we're going to have this kind of a tool available for us.
Okay, and Brian, so Bondi's people raising will be able to weigh in as well?
Pardon me, say again?
People will be able to weigh in as well, seeing this modeling?
Yes, so this is just the teaser, if you will, on the groundwater model. There will be a stakeholder event, another workshop that will have only the groundwater model on the agenda. So it's likely to be a 2 or 3 hour kind of marathon event where we'll tear into whatever technical details people want to tear into on the model to see how it was developed, what kind of assumptions were made, and that kind of thing. So yeah, there's going to be additional opportunities for stakeholders to peek under the hood, so to speak.
Brian Bondi's raising his hand. I think he has a question.
Yes, and then we have a comment in the chat box after that. So Brian, go ahead. Super.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Actually, you teed up my question there, whoever asked the last question. You know, we went through a very similar process with the Fox Gang and GMA, with United developing a model, and that model thankfully being available to be used to develop the GSP. And there was a technical review group that the GMA put in place to review everything on the GSP, and including the model. One of the challenges that we had, and I was a member of that group, by the way, Tony was as well. One of the challenges we had as technical reviewers when it came time to have the workshop on the model and so on and so forth is that we really didn't have any under the hood information to review. We basically could only listen. And I think it would be really helpful if the technical team could get the model documentation done as early as possible in the process. So those folks like myself who have been hired to do review have something to review, something tangible to review and to provide meaningful feedback. My concern would be that we get far down the road using the model, which we need to use the model, but we get far down the road and then too late in the process, that information becomes available and then questions are raised and it's too late to do anything about it at that point. So I think the best thing for the process would be to get the under the hood information out so that people like myself and others that may be looking to review it can do that and provide input that can actually be used to improve the model and the analysis. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the information and feedback. Lisa, you want to read the Zoom one?
Yes, I was muted again. Okay, so we have a comment from Katie Brokaw. I'm glad to see the background on the development of the modeling and the water budget. I'm hoping that as the GSA is implemented, there remains adequate water for the crops in our area and that there is not a forced reduction in agricultural pumping. It is critical for our ranch and for my neighboring growers that we have a reliable, dependable water supply. So I'm eager to see the actual projections and the GSP draft. Yeah, there was more on that. Does anybody on the board want to respond to that comment at all before I read the next one?
Well, we do have Gordon or Glenn, would you like to comment on that as part of our representation from the Pumpers Association?
I can. I mean, it's what we're all looking for, because that's the purpose of this, is what will we be able to use from the basin on a sustainable basis? So I think every pumper who depends on water, both agricultural, municipal, and the residents of Piru and Fillmore, want to see the answer to that question. So
I would concur, just as from the county's perspective, we want to make sure our ag is supported and that we have water for the municipal. I think those are two key points, but we're hoping not to have to cut any water from anybody, and it's the sustainability of the future of this area in agriculture is very important. So.
Great.
Go ahead.
And everybody will have, there will be ample opportunity to see and comment on that GSP draft. before it becomes final. So we have another comment from Matt Freeman. Thank you to Supervisor Long for chairing the Fillmore and Piro Basin GSA, and also thank you to the GSA members. Camulus Ranch is very concerned about what is going on in Los Angeles County with significant ongoing development, especially, and its impact on the Piru Basin. Supervisor Long and Tony Morgan referred to the fact that GSAs and GSPs that are adjacent, such as the GSP being created in the upper Santa Clara River shed in Santa Clarita County. In early 2000, Los Angeles County Sanitation Department used to discharge approximately 18,000 acre feet of water into the Santa Clara River. Much of that water was very high in chlorides. Today, I believe the LA County Sanitation is discharging approximately 12,000 to 13,000 acre feet of water annually to comply with the new chloride TDML mandated by the Regional Water Quality Control Board for the upper Piru Basin reach. Considering how much these surface flows beneficial to the environmental species and habitat and ag can discharge flows, can discharge flows be reduced by LA County?
Go ahead, Dan, and I'll follow.
All right. That's correct, Matt. There has been a reduction in flow from LA County over the county line. Some of that is conservation measures among that community and a drier watershed in LA County. We do know additional flow reductions are coming. The sanitation district has responded to the complaints about chloride and the regulatory pressure. They're intending to construct a reverse osmosis facility to treat their discharge to 1 in 100 parts per million chloride. That alone will result in a reduced discharge because that brine element will be reduced from the discharge. They have longer term plans to use more of that recycled water within their own basin. So it's very much a critical issue for Piru Basin. Those base flows have been sustaining water levels in Piru for decades now. And as much as we don't like the chloride load, we are gonna have to live with a lesser flow. As far as the regulatory elements for environmental base flows, that's certainly a factor in their permitting with the regional board, but I'm not sure it's something that the GSP will have much involvement with other than reacting to it for our forward projections.
Yeah, I'll add that this is one of those issues that we need to coordinate with the folks in Santa Clarita. And so even just as recently as this week, I had some conversations with the agency representative up there about the need to get together and talk about this specific issue, but also just issues about future climate projections. And it'd be nice if everyone in the whole river, Santa Clara River Valley, were all using the same future climate projections. So it all fits together and in a relatively seamless manner. And so those kinds of discussion topics certainly have to carry forward. I agree with Dan. I don't know that this GSA would really have much involvement in determining what the environmental flows are for LA County. It does not mean that you certainly can't weigh in and present an opinion at those times when they're being heard before the various boards, regional board, for example. You can weigh in, but obviously the final decision is their decision and not necessarily this GSA's. We can certainly weigh in and let them know how it affects our ability to reach sustainability.
Yeah.
And so there are multiple hydrographs in the Piru Basin, for example, that show how flashy the groundwater elevations were historically, and then late 60s, early 70s, those things tended to level out, and that correlates pretty well with when increased levels of wastewater effluent were being discharged into the river. So we know it has an impact in the basin. We just need to get with Santa Clarita Valley and find out how much are you going to reduce it and what's the time frame on which that's going to occur. Is it going to occur within the 20-year window that we're attempting to reach sustainability? We need to know that up front so we can factor that into our plan. If they say it's going to occur in year 50 down the road, well, that's a different animal. I doubt that it's going to be that far out in time, but we need to have some idea of timing and magnitude of the changes in those flows.
Thank you. We've got another question in the chat box from Debbie Jackson. When do you plan to develop the objectives? I agree with Katie. Certainty about water supply is crucial for pumpers.
I'll jump in on that one. Certainty about water supply is what this whole process is about. We're trying to come up with a program, come up with a plan that provides the most favorable, beneficial conditions for all users of groundwater there. And so the objectives, if you're meaning like the management objectives and the MTs, those kinds of things, that's probably gonna get started in earnest 6 months-ish from now would be my recollection of the schedule.
Okay.
In the meantime, we'll be doing analyses and working with United on the model to see what resolution we can tease out of the model and that kind of thing, and be ready for doing those MT and MO evaluations.
And the timeline is on our website as well, right?
I believe that one is on the website.
Okay, great. Lisa, are there any other questions?
I'm not seeing any other questions or any other hands raised.
Okay, thank you. At this time, I would like to open it up to our board members for any ending comments or concerns, questions, and also to any of the other of our team that is creating this GSP GSA for the GSA.
Chair Long, I have a comment.
Yes.
I'll repeat something you said at the very beginning of the meeting. The Sigma process was set up to incorporate stakeholder input and influence. And it's, I can't express how important it is for all stakeholders to do just that. Tell us what you think. There'll be times scattered out through the next 2 years where you can do that. Make your views known. It's very, very important. And it's also important to get your friends and fellow stakeholders to do the same. So please jump in and participate.
Thank you. Candace, Gordon, or Glenn?
I'll jump in, Kelly, if you don't mind. Again, back to what you said in the beginning, we were given a gift in modern government times. It's pretty rare when the government says to the local people, you take charge, you make decisions for yourself. And in order for us to do that, especially for us as board members, we really need to hear from the constituents about what's important. We need them as much as it's a burden and they've got plenty of other things to do. And sometimes it's not very exciting. We need you involved. We need you paying attention. We need your comments so that this first version of the plan can be best suited to everybody. And I'd also add that Sigma requires that the plan be revised every 5 years. And I predict we're going to see one at every, we're going to see the first one at 2 years after DWR reviews the submitted plan and comes back and wants changes. So it's not a document that just is printed, goes on the shelf, and everybody forgets about it. This is a living plan that we will change at the minimum every 5 years, revise, perfect. The model will get better. Our understanding will get better. Our experience with climate change will get better. So it's going to be a permanent part. But this initial part where we lay the groundwork is the most critical, and we need everybody's help. And I was pretty impressed that we had on Zoom, which is probably the first time for a lot of people, we had as many as we did, and that 41 of you stayed clear through the technical session. So thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Gordon. Anyone else?
I was going to jump in.
Yes, Candace.
I want to thank all our presenters that presented information this evening and for everybody attending. To to echo what all the board members so far have said, we invite your active participation in this process. And we want to hear what your water needs are, what will help your operations, what will incentivize you to help bring the basins into sustainability. I think that sort of feedback is really going to help guide policy and project development, and we want that feedback from our participants. That said, as much as I do represent the environmental community and that stakeholder group, we are trying to balance everybody's needs across the board, from the city, the county, and the pumpers. And I think, you know, under the leadership of our board, we're looking at those multi-benefit projects and approaches to doing that, to finding that balance. That said, just this past Friday, I also, with assistance from the Ventura River Watershed Council, as well as the Santa Clara River Watershed Committee, we hosted a focused webinar on groundwater-dependent ecosystems. Ultimately, through this process, we want to make sure that our operations aren't negatively impacting groundwater-dependent ecosystems. And so for folks that are interested in that component, we will be making a link available to the GSA that will be coming onto the it will be made available. So if people want to watch that webinar, it will be made available soon in the coming week. And I encourage folks to also get more background on groundwater dependent ecosystems and what we are trying to do in that regard. So thank you for hanging in there for the last 2.5 hours and for phoning in and participating this evening.
Thank you very much, Candace. Anyone else? I would just like to say thank you. I know we are all getting comfortable with Sigma, and we will all be weighing in on the 6 factors that we have to do. As Gordon said, we'll be submitting a plan. However, it will be continually looked at and modified. So this GSA, the Fillmore Piru Groundwater Sustainable Agency, is not going away anytime soon. And so we hope as a board to manage this in the best way possible so that we can have sustainability for the long term. And we really appreciate all of your assistance. Thank you to the panelists. Thank you to everyone who's here. Please show up to our board meetings, or now that we're on Zoom, maybe we'll have more attendance, which is fabulous. And we have also, if there's anyone who needs it in Spanish or any other language, we have that capability too. So appreciate again everyone's time and consideration. And if there's no other comments, I'm going to close this so you can all enjoy the rest of your night. So thank you so much, everyone. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly.